This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending 6th of September 2024. Hello. And welcome to the Winchester Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle, dated the 5th of September 2024. Your readers today are Tony Bergstrom.
Hello.
John Richards.
Hello.
Jane Rutter.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, John Parker. The main headlines this week are: murder probe after woman found dead, councillor frustrated by Danger Junction inaction, and Ukrainian culture celebrated in city. So we start with the first headline story.
Murder probe after woman found dead. Body discovered next to car abandoned in country lane. Police have launched a murder investigation after the body of a woman was found next to a car in a country lane near Usselbury. Officers were called on Tuesday evening to Wadden Lane following the discovery of the body of a woman in her 30s lying next to an abandoned black car. The area close to the rear of Marwell Zoo was taped off, and yesterday forensic staff in white suits examined the scene. A bunch of flowers has been left at the site. Hampshire Constabulary issued a statement to the Hampshire Chronicle. We were called at 5:51 p.m. on Tuesday, the 3rd of September, after the body of a woman in her 30s was found near to Wadden Lane, Usselbury. The homicide investigation has been launched to establish the cause of her death, but officers are keeping an open mind at this early stage of their inquiries. The woman has not been formally identified, but her next of kin have been informed and are being supported by specialist officers. Officers will be in the area conducting inquiries, and if you have any concerns, please speak to us. Anyone with any information is asked to call 101 with reference 442 403 785 66. That number again, 442 403 785 66. The death has stunned people in Usselbury, a scheduled hilltop village. One resident said, "This is really sad for the family involved, but also very concerning for our community. We are a close-knit village, and as soon as we saw the police car racing through the village on Tuesday evening, we knew something was wrong. Our village fete takes place on Sunday, and I am sure that all of our thoughts will be with those involved in this sad discovery."
Councillor frustrated by Danger Junction inaction. A Lib Dem councillor has penned an open letter to express her frustration over Hampshire County Council's inaction over a dangerous junction. There was another crash at the Cart and Horses Junction on Sunday, August the 25th, the latest of dozens over the past 10 years, some fatal. Councillor Jackie Porter wrote, "Minor tweaks have been made. The road has slower speed limits, lit speed indicator devices installed, and a new prominent stop sign on the Cart and Horses pub side. Looks like something has been done, but it's not enough. Many accident investigations cite driver error, but after a decade since the first fatality at this site and many emergency vehicle attendances to minor accidents, I ask, why are drivers confused here? Kingsworthy residents have previously rallied to protest what they see as the County Council's inaction over the junction's transformation. Ms. Porter, who is a member of the opposition to the County Council's current cabinet, asked, Is it because Hampshire County Council reportedly spends so much on repairing potholes that have been poorly repaired before? She also complained that plans to make the junction safer were excluded from the massive project to transform Junction 9 on the M3 a few miles away. Ms. Porter wrote, "It is so frustrating and dangerous that this work has not been included in the National Highways Junction 9 works. But after all the consultations, the County Council doesn't have a clue how to afford or make the changes that the public and I demand. I had a meeting with the County Council leader booked for the week before the bank holiday to discuss funding for this work, but it was then postponed to the week starting August the 26th. I'll make sure that he sees the CCTV footage of the accident. I cannot bear the thought that many more people will be hurt here. The County Council has been asked to comment."
Ukrainian culture celebrated in city. Hundreds celebrated Ukrainian Independence Day with singing, dancing and crafts in Winchester. The Winchester Ukrainian Cultural Association invited the city to a family fun day in Abbey Gardens on Saturday, August the 31st. The Independence Day of Ukraine is celebrated on August the 24th to commemorate the Declaration of Independence in 1991. Chair of the association, Yulia Dubrovnik, explained that the event in Winchester was held a week late to allow people to travel back home for the main holiday. She said, "It's been a pretty successful day. We've seen hundreds of Ukrainians. We had musical entertainment from Kalnia and Ukrainian workshops making traditional dolls called Montaka. While the day was a moment for families to gather and have fun, marking Independence Day, while Ukraine is still at war with Russia, is tough for many." Yulia added, "It's a huge thing. We all feel very sad now because Ukraine has been under the biggest shelling, I think, since the beginning. No city is safe right now. For us, it's really important to understand that we are together, and together with the British people, this day is for everyone. It's difficult to explain how we really feel right now. It's like we live two parallel lives. We wake up and check the news, and then we get on with our day. We need to show our children that there is hope and there is still reason for joy. We think about our children here and those who are still in Ukraine. Children are amazing. They can build bridges and form friendships without anything, without shared language even." Leila Smaglova, a singer, set up Kalina, a choir of Ukrainian women living in Winchester. At the family day, they provided musical entertainment for the crowd. The group performed traditional Ukrainian music, plus some covers of British songs. She said, "It's important for everyone here in the choir to share our feelings, passions and emotions." And the article is accompanied by a couple of lovely photographs of Ukrainian ladies and some children and their dogs. And they're all wearing beautiful Ukrainian embroidered traditional costumes and lovely floral headdresses. Very attractive.
That concludes the headline stories, and we continue with the death announcements. Arnold, Dennis Edward Arnold, at Winchester Hospice on the 7th of August, aged 91. Collins, Juliet Claire Collins, aged 66, on the 28th of August at home in Charmouth. Lipscomb, Barry David Lipscomb, who was Mayor of Winchester from 2011 to 2012, at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital on the 16th of August, aged 81. Oakley, Patricia Oakley, known as Pat, at Brendan Care St Giles View, Winchester, on the 7th of August, aged 93. Randall, Frederick John Randall, known as Fred, on the 21st of August at Shawford Springs Care Home, aged 83. Sanders, Susan Harriet Sanders, on the 17th of August, aged 91. Shapcott, Audrey, on the 26th of August at home, aged 92. Silk, Susan Mary Dunbar Silk, known as Sue, on the 15th of August at home. Smith, Margaret Smith, née Thatcher, known as Peggy, on the 21st of August. Stevens, Terry Stevens, on the 10th of August, aged 84, in Cardigan, Wales. Wrigley, Peter Michael Wrigley, at home on the 4th of May, aged 77. And now we have Christian comment.
And this is called Song of Creation, and it's by the Reverend Philip Crinks. The idea that creation sings may seem an odd one. Of course, birds sing, often very beautifully, and whales, also gibbons, mice, and bats, even humans. As Christians, we especially sing in praise for the way that the life, death, and resurrection of Jesus have reconciled us to each other and to God. But does the whole of creation sing? Christians would say that it does, and that the church is called to join in its song. This is a theme from the book of Daniel onwards, when the three young men survive their terrible persecution by Nebuchadnezzar. They join in song with all creation. O all you works of the Lord, bless the Lord. O you whales and all that move in the waters, praise him and magnify him for ever. Centuries later, St. Francis delighted in all the works of God's hand. He saw the Maker's mark in his brother, the sun, and his sister, the moon, who all come from the same source. Francis's Canticle of the Sun was a song of praise to God from creation. Today, we sing a version of this in the familiar hymn, All Creatures of Our God and King, Lift Up Your Voice and With Us Sing Alleluia. Creation sings with joy, not only at the wonder of its existence, but also to celebrate that it's being restored. During Jesus' earthly ministry, people saw this clearly. God was working to restore the beauty of creation in the divine word, through whom all things were made. In Genesis, the tree of life symbolizes the perfection from which human sin separated us, as we were driven east of Eden. Because of that sin and separation, the cross was necessary. It was made the new tree of life, ensuring not only reconciliation for human beings, but also that this restoration of creation finally will be achieved. We, in our continued sinfulness, often work against God's intention, wrecking damage rather than working for restoration. But still, he has promised that restoration will take place through a new heaven and a new earth. At the end of all things, when God's purposes are fulfilled, the tree of life grows forever, bearing 12 crops of fruit, yielding fruit every month, and the leaves of the tree are for the healing of the nations. Creation sings because its restoration is sure. The church joins its song of praise and prays for grace to participate in the divine work of restoration, especially at this time of year as summer nears its end. Some churches have a special season of worship throughout September. Some will hold harvest festivals. Some will be involved in the events of Winchester Green Week from September the 21st to the 29th. Some will remember St. Francis around the anniversary of his death on October the 4th. O God of unchangeable power and eternal light, look favourably on your church, that wonderful and sacred mystery, and let the whole world feel and see that things which had grown old are being made new, and that all things are returning to perfection, through him from whom they took their origin, even Jesus Christ our Lord. Amen. And that is by the Reverend Philip Quinks.
Next, we have the letters to the editor. If you yourself would like to send a letter to the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so by either telephoning 01962 860 836, that's 01962 860 836, emailing letters@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, that's letters@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or writing to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. That's 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. We've got 10 letters this week on a variety of topics. One of the letters actually refers to an item of news which we will hear later on in the recording. So we'll start off with the first letter,
which is from Miss J. Falconer. And the headline of this is, "An ice rink would be a great asset. For many years, I have regularly enjoyed ice skating as a hobby and have always had to use the ice rink at Basingstoke. As a facility, this venue has declined in recent years. Potholes on the ice, frosting and other issues. But the sport has always provided me and others I know with many benefits to both our physical and mental health. Given the number of families in Winchester, with both young children and teenagers, I believe an ice rink would be a wonderful facility to bring to the city, offering activities such as hockey, skating lessons, synchronized skating, competitions, and inclusive general skating for all ages and abilities, a great way for families, teenagers, and individuals to spend their time, especially during the winter. The city seems so limited in terms of activities for young people. Antisocial behaviour due to boredom is definitely on the increase, leading to petty crime and mindless hanging around town when they could be engaged in something fun, positive and active. A leisure facility, including an ice rink, would provide all these things and offer a good level of inclusivity for diverse needs. It would also provide a safe environment for all who use it. Winchester City Council seems to place a lot of focus on building houses, old people's homes, and students' accommodation, which all has its place. However, leisure facilities for the whole family to enjoy together are scarce, and the focus on this seems to have declined since the pandemic. I am aware that at some point the depot at Bar End was up for sale and discussions were mooted regarding an ice rink, etc. But nothing seemed to materialise from this. I would be interested to know if others in the city and surrounding areas would like to see a facility such as I have outlined come to Winchester." That letter is from Miss J. Falconer, Priorsdean Road, Hairstock, Winchester.
In this letter, Jock MacDonald calls on the Chancellor to tax the ships. Cruisillas, as one national newspaper has called them, a.k.a. cruise ships, the behemoths of the deep, gorging on filthy, untaxed fossil fuels, belching CO2 and methane into the air and soiling seas with toxic sludge. Isn't now the time when our Iron Chancellor should tax them out of British waters for the next 5 years and in the process earn at least a temporary dividend to line the UK's empty coffers. After all, she's not increasing VAT, income tax or national insurance. A tax on cruise ships would have several advantages apart from increasing the Treasury's funds. It would fight the climate crisis. It would help relieve all those tiny towns around the planet from having skyscrapers anchored in their ports or off their shores, disgorging tourists who contribute little to local economies because they eat and sleep in the bellies of these monsters, five times the size of the Titanic, and getting even bigger. And it would show the world that finally the UK is taking this truly global, rather than just national, crisis seriously by taking a leaf out of the playbooks of Venice, Barcelona and Amsterdam, and in doing so helping to protect the waters round vulnerable island nations and even places like Ponta Delgada in the Azores. I believe that 14 of these megaships were in Southampton over the bank holiday. I hope that the newly elected MPs in the areas nearby take note. After all, the measures suggested above are in accord with the manifestos that they were following. Nor can I believe that sensible Conservatives like Caroline Noakes MP and some members in Hampshire County Council wouldn't agree and make this a cross-party policy. And that letter was from Jock MacDonald, Stockbridge Road, full flood in Winchester.
Vandals strike is the heading of this letter from Rod Youngman. I'm vice chairman of the Friends of Hockley Viaduct. I received a telephone call from the chairman, Julia Sanderson, to go to the viaduct as reports that it had been vandalised. Since the railway line crossing it had been closed in 1964, the viaduct soon became derelict. Plans were made to demolish it by offering the army the chance to blow it up as an exercise. But public opinion and the refusal of the army to take up the offer led to the viaduct laying moribund. Eventually, it was decided by various authorities to restore this historic structure. Funds were raised by Winchester City Council, Hampshire County Council, Sustrans, who used closed railways at footpaths and cycleways, and the South Downs National Park, together with the Friends. The Friends installed plaques explaining its history, and the council created signs describing what can be seen from the viewpoints from the viaduct. It has been much used since restoration by walkers, runners and cyclists. My visit revealed graffiti covering the walks, but the damage to the signal was the major concern. Donated by Network Rail, it arrived without the red and green aspects. It took the Friends 18 months to source replacements and another 2 years, because of COVID-19, to get the spectacles installed. Now someone has used a catapult or stone to cause a large crack in the green one. You can imagine, after all the hard work the Friends have done over the years, how disappointed we are. From what remains of our meagre funds, we will have to pay to get the graffiti removed, but to get a replacement green aspect will be more difficult. And this letter is from Rod Youngman, Cromwell Road, Stanmore, Winchester.
Yeah, there will be a news item later on about the same issue.
Paul Bond writes about cold comfort. Sometimes it is best to marshal your facts before putting pen to paper. With regard to the views expressed by Mr. Biden, Chronicle Letters, August 22nd, when he writes about the boomer generation, he should have been aware that when I went to university in 1969, only 5% of the population were fortunate to get places. 95% of the people he was referring to never went, and therefore never got any fees paid. Free school meals were available for only 10 to 15% of the school children, of which only 50% had school dinners. Again, only 5 to 7.5% of the school population received this benefit. And these people were unlikely to be the same as the ones gaining university places, for obvious reasons. As far as people in their 20s affording a house is concerned, as my starting salary after university was the grand sum of £1,100 a year, one wonders quite who he has in mind. The vast majority of the boomer generation got none of the imaginary benefits referred to in his letter, and the points made by Mr. Murray are also very valid. Maybe if Mr. Biden were to travel to a less well-off part of the country, he may appreciate how many pensioners are going to really struggle without the winter fuel payments, especially if we have a harsh winter. That letter is from Paul Bond, Kingsway, Chandler's Ford.
In this letter, Carol Geddes encourages us to shop local. It is good to see two of Winchester city centre's most prominent corner shops getting a new lease of life. Less so, one of them becoming a high street bakery cafe within a pigeon's flap of so many others. Our main thoroughfare is saturated when it comes to sustenance, surely lessening the chance of tourists veering off the beaten track, to say nothing of day trippers who struggle to find the Christmas market. But while visitors and many locals tuck into a true taste of counties further west, a short distance away are characterful alternatives, striving to bring vibrancy and much-needed variety to our city's food scene. If Winchester's small businesses and a true taste of Hampshire are to survive, it seems increasingly incumbent on those living and working in the city to savour and support independent eateries before it's too late. And that letter was from Carol Geddes, Cannon Street in Winchester.
A Dark Past is the heading of this letter from E.Z. Mayer. Winchester is undoubtedly one of the more interesting places to visit, and it retains a certain charm. But how many people know about its dark past? For example, the Muckabees, the Swing Riots, and Alice Lyle, not to mention Sir Walter Raleigh and Ruth Ellis. Winchester is still very smug and pretentious, but I guess that comes with privilege. It's not the genteel place it once was, but to people escaping from London, it's the ideal place.
Indeed.
And that's from E.Z. Mayer, Eastacre, Week, Winchester.
Now, Chris O'Neill, the chair of Hampshire Unison Retired Members Section, writes a letter entitled Winter Fuel Woe. Many of us cheered the impressive victory of the Labour Party at the recent general election after a decade of austerity when public services had dwindled in some cases to ineffectiveness operated by demoralised staff. At last, there was the opportunity for change. Heartbreakingly, one of the new government's first actions was withdrawal of the winter fuel allowance from all but the most financially challenged pensioners. Announcements followed of increases in energy costs this autumn, with anticipated further rises in the new year. For more than a decade, we have regularly taken our banner on the streets of this county and London, expressing our concern at the rate of excessive winter deaths of pensioners due to cold and hunger. Government policy will sadly probably lead to an increase in the number of these deaths. Some policy, some society. The indifference to the needs of pensioners has continued through the years, such as the withdrawal of free television licences to those over 75 years of age, ongoing attacks on the triple lock protection on the state pension, which is already inadequate, and because of government policy on personal allowances, is likely to become taxable for even the poorest. Why, when cuts in taxation were deemed appropriate, was national insurance chosen rather than income tax, thus denying this financial benefit to all retired pensioners? Locally, Hampshire County Council never ceases to seek routes to minimise the effectiveness of the bus pass or seek financial benefit from administering the scheme. Perhaps a return is required to a philosophy that if cash is required to fix a failing society, the proper method is by taxing according to ability to pay, and not by blighting the lives of many pensioners by withdrawing benefits. I am proud that during the recent civil unrest, members of my union, yes, including our pensioners section, have joined many other fine people on the streets of our county to express our view that all people in our country have a right to live in peace and harmony without threats, intimidation, or persecution. Those who willfully try to deny these rights should be fiercely challenged. That letter is from Chris O'Neill, Chair of Hampshire Unison Retired Members Section, Monarch Way, Winchester.
This letter is entitled Grim and Grey, and it's from Paul Hickey. Winchester Bus Station, what a horrible place. Winchester High Street is full of elegant streets and elegant shops. However, take a trip to the nearby bus station and you're in for a horrible shock. What a horrible place it is. It's like something out of 1950s communist Russia. It's so grim, dirty, grey, and just full of horrible concrete. Where's the bright, cheerful colours in this bus station? Where's the greenery in this bus station, like flowers, bushes, pot plants, etc.? The very minimal seating is also so decrepit, old, and on its last legs. And why isn't there ample bus shelters for when it rains? Think of a really run-down, poor town in England, and this is the type of horrible bus station that you would expect to see. But this is elegant, historical Winchester, for God's sake. This horrible bus station really is like you're in 1950s communist Russia. Come on, Winchester City Council. Give this decrepit, dirty, grim bus station the following things. A good paint job, full of bright, cheerful colours. Give it a good regular clean. Add lots of greenery to the bus station, like flowers, bushes, pot plants, etc. Replace and increase the minimal, decrepit seating areas and add ample bus shelters for when it rains. Winchester bus station is such a disgrace to elegant, historical Winchester High Street. It really is so grim, dirty and decrepit. And that was from Paul Hickey, Meadow Way, Badger Farm in Winchester.
And next is another letter about the bus station.
Yes, this is another one, and this one is from Anne Shepherd. Regarding the complaints about the bus station, I would say be grateful you've got one. I live in Reading. We don't have a bus station anymore. We used to. The backing up of buses all around our town is messy and dangerous. I would love to be able to walk in a designated area like Winchester has. I love your city. And that's from Anne Shepherd, River Walk, Purley-on-Thames, Berkshire.
Very good. On the cards, writes Mel Cook, who is chairman of Ampfield Bridge Club. After the impact of COVID, Ampfield Bridge Club is rebuilding its membership and continues to invite new members to join them on a Tuesday evening at the Ampfield Village Hall to play duplicate bridge. To aid this, they have introduced this year bridge lessons for both beginners and those who may already have some knowledge of bridge but are looking to make the transition to duplicate bridge. The lessons are given on an intense weekly basis in small groups for an initial period of 10 weeks. The first attendees have already made the transition to the club weekly event and enjoying not only the games but also the social contact and friendship that comes with it. A group is just coming to the end of their course and the club is looking to start a further group in the autumn. Mel can be contacted on 07889 323037. That number again, 07889 323037. Mel can be contacted on that number for more details on membership or bridge lessons. That is from Mel Cook, Chairman, Ampfield Bridge Club.
That concludes the letters, and now we have the Hampshire Chronicle editorial comment,
which is entitled, Going Round in Circles Over Junction. Two stories in today's Hampshire Chronicle that are seemingly unrelated, but actually have strong connections. We highlight the ongoing campaign to improve the notorious Cart and Horses Junction, the intersection at Kingsworthy between the B3047 and the A33. It is one of the longest running issues in recent history, with efforts to improve safety going back into the mists of time. Local councillor Jackie Porter has been battling for major improvements rather than the tinkering which just seems to have confused people. It might have slowed traffic down, but the uncertainty appears to be causing more crashes and near misses. The other story is the issue in Sutton Scotney with plans for more than 100 houses at Brightlands on the edge of the village. City Council planners have been told by the government to prepare for the development of many more homes. As an aside, quite who is going to build all these new houses doesn't appear to be being addressed by the London politicians, but that's another story. The issue is that local roads are likely to see a major increase in traffic if schemes such as Sutton Scotney and, heaven forbid, Mitchell-Devon Newtown ever come to pass. That means spots such as the Cart and Horses Junction will come under ever greater pressure, especially when the M3 Junction 9 scheme is completed just up the road. Hampshire County Council, the Highways Authority, should look ahead, grasp the nettle and come up with a proper scheme to tackle this irritating problem. It will be costly, but surely a roundabout is the only answer.
Next we have First Person.
Fight to Protect Our Countryside by Joanna Lewis. The impressive electoral success of Winchester's MP, Dr. Danny Chambers, may have lost a bit of its shine with the news that his campaign benefited from 90,000 cash injection provided by individual donors. That explains the deluge of expensive leaflets then. Such generosity doesn't account for the result, of course. The direction of traffic was strong and steady. But was this really necessary? Maybe Lib Dem HQ became alarmed by the antics of their party leader. Every time Ed Davies gets near a piece of elastic, he seems to have to attach himself to it and head for the nearest elevation. Oh, the madness of the UK electoral system. Now we learn from new academic research that pre-election polls have an inbuilt bias towards predicting left-wing outcomes, and the recent impressive Labour majority, in the terms of the large number of sitting MPs, is built on one of the lowest overall percentages of votes for the winning party. Confused? I am. Already Labour is mired in cronyism allegations. Sir Keir Starmer has appointed a number of party faithful to top jobs in the civil service, despite recent concerns about its neutrality. He also issued a number 10 free pass to a donor who gave 1 million to the party, £20,000 towards clothes and glasses, and £40,000 for a private office. Unsurprisingly, recently, over half the people polled by YouGov thought the government was somewhat or very corrupt, though the percentage was higher when asked about the Tories. Starmer's personal rating has plummeted. It's always better to choose the healthier option when dining out on democracy, not a full-fat one. Britain has, in the past, been the envy of the world, with an electoral system that awards power largely on the basis of competency, its policies, and a free and fair process, not sectional interests, money, nor religion. The more those fundamentals are departed from, the less likely any government serves the interests of people. The more likely it will behave in authoritarian, dogmatic, and self-serving ways. Boundaries between politicians, civil servants, and commercial interests blur. George Orwell's famous literary warning is more relevant than ever. In his invocation of a nightmare totalitarian government in the novel 1984, the most important area for the party is messaging, reality control. Which brings me on to the subject of local policies that meaningfully preserve the environment. Two crucial areas in Winchester remain under critical threat from a smoke and mirror approach to sustainability and diversity. Sir John Moore Barracks and Bushfield Camp. Also, our precious Greenbelt hangs in the balance. Time for a reality check. Why isn't there any spirited push back on protecting local people and the wildlife from overdevelopment? Does this regime believe that by building concrete electric charging points for 44 cars and lorries in a large field off the A34 solves everything? The latest 900 houses planned for the barracks just down the road are largely opposed by local people. What's worse in the short term? Living with the threat of losing this vital conservation area, or enduring another sham process of public consultation? In one of his first messages to his constituents, our new MP describes how much he appreciates running in the beauty of the local countryside. Fight to protect it, then.
Next, there are some what's on announcements. Winchester Heritage Open Days continue until Sunday the 15th of September. That's another week. Probably the best place to find out what's going on is to contact the tourist office, either by going in there or telephoning them, and their telephone number is 01962 840 500. So that's 01962 840 500 for the tourist office. There'll be an item later on in the news items about the Watercress Line plans for the Open Heritage Days. And just to comment that the Hampshire Chronicle office, which we have our studio in, will actually be open today after we finish this recording. But I know this information is a bit too late for you to come and see it, but it's quite nice that we have the opportunity to show people who are interested actually where this recording is made. Other items of what's on: in Winchester Cathedral until the 5th of November, there is an art exhibition called Borrowed Breath by Lawrence Edwards. At the Theatre Royal on Wednesday the 11th of September, singer Camille O'Sullivan will debut her new show, Love Letter. And then from Saturday the 28th of September to Saturday the 5th of October, at the Chesil's Theatre, they'll be presenting a production of Last of the Red Hot Lovers, which is a comedy set in mid-70s New York. Sunrise at the moment is, though it's a very, very wet day today, and the sun was certainly not visible at 6:30 when it rose. Sunset today is at 7:30. So that's sunrise 6:30 in the morning, sunset 7:30 in the evening. If you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you have received from us, please contact us on 01962 861 229. That's 01962 861 229. And this number can also be found on the key fob attached to the memory stick. We continue with further items of news.
Police are probing crashes on the M3. Police are investigating two serious crashes, including a hit and run on the M3 near Winchester involving pedestrians. Both incidents, within less than 18 hours, caused serious congestion for thousands of motorists. The first happened on Friday, northbound between Junction 12 for Chandler's Ford and Junction 11 at Compton. The injured man, aged in his 30s, was taken to hospital with potentially life-threatening injuries. The vehicle driver did not stop. The second collision happened between 6:30 a.m. and 6:35 a.m. on Saturday and saw a car collide with a male pedestrian between junctions 8 and 9 of the northbound carriageway near Winchester. It shut the motorway for around 9 hours. A Southampton man, aged 37, was arrested on suspicion of drug driving. A police spokesman said of the Saturday incident, "We were called at 6:23 a.m. to reports of a man jumping in and out of traffic on the A33, which runs parallel to the M3. This was followed by a second call from a woman who'd been driving on the A33 when a man jumped in front of her vehicle and tried to open the door. At some time between 6:30 a.m. and 6:35 a.m., a collision occurred on the M3 involving a car and a pedestrian, who matches the description of the man seen a short time before on the A33. The pedestrian's been taken to hospital in a life-threatening condition. He remains in hospital at this time. The arrested man was questioned by officers and been released under investigation. The road was closed until just before 3 p.m. on Saturday, causing miles of tailbacks and heavy delays as far south as Chandler's Ford. PC Haytham Zubadai said, "We are appealing for anyone who saw the man on the A33 or the M3 to come forward and speak to us. Were you driving in the area at the time? Do you have a dash cam fitted to your vehicle? If you have any information, please come forward and speak to us. Report online or by calling 101, quoting 442-403-73544. And you'd like that number again? 442-403-73544. This is the second time the northbound carriageway of the M3 was closed in 24 hours after a man was found seriously injured in the road on Friday afternoon in a suspected hit and run. The statement said, "We are appealing for witnesses and dash cam footage following what is believed to be a serious collision on the M3. Police were called at 2:21 p.m. today, Friday, August the 30th, to a report of a man found seriously injured in the northbound carriageway between junctions 12 and 11. At this early stage of the investigation, it's believed he may have been involved in a collision with a vehicle which did not stop at the scene. The injured man, aged in his 30s, has been taken to hospital with potential life-threatening injuries." Excuse me.
New Dementia Daycare Centre opens doors. A new dementia daycare centre has opened its doors in Otterbourne. Forever Young Dementia Day Centre is at Otterbourne Village Hall every Monday from 9:30 a.m. to 3:30 p.m. The centre is run by Steph Pinchback and offers person-centred activities to help stimulate the brain and to help to slow down the progression of dementia. Attendees also get a two-course lunch and snacks throughout the day. Steph said that she opened the centre because she feels that all people who live at home with dementia should have the opportunity to socialise and make new friends. She said, "Forever Young offers person-centred activities to help stimulate the brain and to help slow down the progression of dementia. Living with dementia can feel lonely, and those often feel isolated. We want to give carers that much-needed respite for a few hours every week, knowing their loved ones are having a great time at the Dementia Daycare Centre in a safe and happy environment. You do not need to have a GP or a health professional referral to attend. We also accept people who are waiting for a dementia diagnosis. No one should have to wait. If I can help families, then I know I'm doing a good job." Listening to families say how difficult it was to care for their loved ones full time at home before they came to the care home makes me want to help people even more. And there aren't many daycare centres around to offer weekly sessions.
Rural protection plea in planning strategy. Civic chiefs have rubber-stamped the next consultation on the district's housing and employment allocations after an effort from the Conservatives to remove any sites in the countryside. The Local Plans Regulation 19 consultation started on Thursday, August the 29th, and will be available for comments until October the 13th. The latest draft previously went before Winchester City Council Scrutiny Committee and Cabinet before the four-hour full council meeting on Wednesday, August the 28th. The meeting was brought forward after the Labour government announced new housing targets, meaning the number of homes earmarked for Winchester District per year has gone up from 676 to 1,099, an increase of 423, or 62%. The plan includes development at major sites such as Sir John Moore Barracks and Bushfield Camp, as well as smaller sites in the southern parishes and market towns. Councillor Stephen Godfrey, Conservative, praised many aspects of the plan, but then suggested an amendment to only build on brownfield sites. He said, "I welcome many aspects of this plan. I applaud the improvements to biodiversity and the more flexible approach to affordable housing. However, after he introduced the amendment, he added, "Now is the time to act to protect the countryside." Council leader Martin Todd said, "We will not be supporting this amendment. The Conservative Party really is in a mess on this one. This would cause a major delay by reducing the number of site allocations." The amendment was rejected with 8 votes for, 31 against and 1 abstention. During earlier questions from the public, Patrick Davis, a former leader of the Labour Group on the City Council, has been critical of the process. He said, "The most important thing we can do to properly control development in the Winchester District is to have an up-to-date local plan. And that is what we will be discussing. The guidance is that local planning authorities that have submitted their plan for inspection within the deadline of the publication on the National Planning Policy Framework should proceed. The council is following that procedure to the letter," said Councillor Todd. "It is clear that Mr. Davis has not read the NPPF consultation document, because it lays out the process, which is absolutely clear, that if a council has submitted its Regulation 22 plan for inspection within 1 month of the approval of the draft NPPF, then the inspector will be expected to inspect it on that basis. Councillor Jackie Porter, Cabinet Member for Place and Local Plan, said, "I believe the proposal is a sound local plan."
Market Town is named among country's best. A bijou Georgian market town in Hampshire, with lovely pubs and restaurants, has been named among the best in the UK. Alsford was featured alongside 15 others in a list from the Daily Mail, who consulted property experts and estate agents. Discussing the creation of the list, the newspaper wrote, "Most high streets these days are a sad mix of vape shops, Costas, and probably a betting shop or two. So, where do you move to if you want a strong community, welcoming coffee shops, and vibrant atmosphere, all within walking distance? The answer is a market town." And what was said about Alsford? Alsford was featured among the best market towns due to the wide range of produce that is available on their market days, as well as its mixture of well-regarded pubs and eateries. The Daily Mail wrote, "The bijou Georgian town of Alsford takes its Thursday market seriously. Traders sell everything from mobile phone accessories to award-winning bread, cake, and eggs. There's a bookshop and stalls selling organic foods, olive oils, logs from a local supplier, and even cycle repairs. One old favourite is Derek Price, who grows his own herbs, flowers, and vegetables. The trust which runs the market is looking to expand, and it would be an ideal opportunity to get a foot on the ladder of commerce. A single bay stall only costs £15 a week. Worth it to sample a breakfast from Sarah Kendall's refreshment van and to get to know the locals. Perhaps, unsurprisingly, the most sought-after streets in Alsford are to be found near where the market takes place." And this article is accompanied with a very attractive picture of a Georgian high street, with absolutely no people in it. But Alsford train station has quite a few people in it, and those pictures are both very attractive.
Preserved railway signal vandalised at historic viaduct. And this article echoes a letter that we read earlier from Mr. Youngman. "A railway signal on a historic railway viaduct near Winchester has been vandalised. A glass spectacle on the signal on Hockley Viaduct has been damaged," reports the Friends of Hockley Viaduct. "The viaduct has also seen a spate of graffiti by several offenders, including someone with the tag BANDS, B-A-N-D-S. The viaduct, under the threat of demolition until the 1980s, has been restored and officially reopened to the public in February 2013. In a letter to the Hampshire Chronicle, the Vice Chairman, Rod Youngman, said, "Someone has used a catapult or stone to cause a large crack in the green spectacle. You can imagine, after all the hard work the Friends have done over the years, how disappointed we are. The 33-span viaduct, one of the first modern structures to be built with a concrete core, was opened in the 1890s and carried its last train in the mid-1960s, following the closure of the line from Newbury to Winchester. It now forms part of the National Cycle Network Route 23.
Queen takes on new regimental role. The Queen has deepened her association with her father's beloved regiment by becoming the first patron of the Riflemen's Association. Queen Camilla is Colonel-in-Chief of the Rifles and is now the figurehead of its association, which enables serving soldiers, veterans and their families to remain part of the regimental family, offering friendship, support and help. The Winchester-based regiment was formed in 2007 as an amalgamation of the Royal Green Jackets, the Light Infantry and other infantry regiments. Lieutenant General Tom Coppinger Symes, Colonel Commandant, the Rifles, said, "This is a huge privilege for the regiment and highlights Her Majesty's care, commitment and understanding for the well-being of our soldiers and their families. We are honoured that she has chosen to offer her patronage to all our riflemen and their families." The Queen has personal links to the Rifles through her late father, Major Bruce Shand. Two battalions of the Rifles form part of the celebrated 7th Infantry Brigade, otherwise known as the Desert Rats, with whom Major Shand served. Major Shand was awarded the Military Cross in 1940 during the retreat to Dunkirk, and again in 1942 for his efforts in North Africa, and was later wounded and taken prisoner while fighting in North Africa. He died in June 2006 at the age of 89.
Youngsters share finds at City Dig Site's open day. The public had a chance to see discoveries in the latest archaeological dig in Winchester city centre. A dig has taken place at Friarsgate Park, the new open space to the bus station on the site of the demolished Friarsgate GP surgery. Around 100 people went along to the family archaeological event on Thursday. The City Council contractors, Pre-Construct Archaeology, offered a hands-on learning experience as young people discovered, washed and analysed fragments of ancient pottery. Local businesses Bella Crafts and Design Junction ran stations to engage creative sparks with activities including pottery painting and tile design, inspired by some of the artefacts that have been found on site. The event marked the end of a six-week-long dig, with more than 120 community volunteers participating in uncovering Winchester's hidden history. The recently completed Friarsgate Park now includes seating, soft landscaping with wildflowers, and improved views of the River Itchen. Alongside the improvement works at King's Walk, the park is one of several temporary initiatives being introduced to improve run-down parts of the city as part of Central Winchester regeneration, while a longer-term designs for the entire site are developed. There have been calls for a full-scale archaeological dig similar to the one conducted before the building of the Brooks Centre in the late 1980s, but the City Council said it would be too expensive and take too long, so instead limited work has been targeted at certain places on the site, including the latest spot on the corner of Friar's Gate and the entrance to the bus station.
County's bleak finances worsen. The bleak financial picture at cash-strapped Hampshire County Council has worsened as the anticipated budget shortfall has risen by £43 million to £175 million. Hampshire County Council has published a report which said the previous budget gap of £132 million has actually risen to £175 million for the 2025-26 financial year. The report said that while setting the budget for 2024-25, it was highlighted that £18 million of school transport pressure was absorbed within the £132 million budget gap. Officers also noted that the economic position for 2023-24 showed a gross overspend across adults and children's services of £38.1 million. Therefore, the overall financial position for 2025-26 was reviewed. The report confirmed the likely increase in the financial gap after the review. In October and November 2023, following a stage one consultation process on options for balancing the budget, Cabinet and County Council approved savings proposals totalling £90.4 million, which left a budget shortfall of £41.6 million against the £132 million forecast budget gap. However, with the revised budget forecast gap for 25-26 now in its new position, the shortfall will be around £85 million. Leader of Hampshire County Council, Councillor Nick Adams-King, said the council remains positive and optimistic that they can find a solution. He said, "This autumn is a pivotal point for the County Council, as like many local authorities nationally, our budgets are under huge strain now and in the foreseeable future, and now at an increased level that we could not have anticipated. Despite the pressures we face from having less money to do all the things we have done previously, my cabinet colleagues and I remain positive for Hampshire and optimistic that we can find a solution to this challenge by looking at every possible way to help keep balancing the books, as well as continuing to press our case to central government for crucial additional funding and, most importantly, greater decision-making powers, so Hampshire County Council continue to serve our residents in a sustainable way. Our strong track record also stands us in good stead, with over a decade of experience of innovative practice, operational efficiency, and resource sharing with other public sector organisations to help make the most of taxpayers' money. We have also carefully managed our financial reserves to act as a crucial buffer against budget shortfalls, albeit those reserves set aside for this purpose are now almost all used up."
Open weekend on the Heritage Rail Line. A behind-the-scenes tour of a beloved heritage railway will take place on Saturday, September the 14th and Sunday, September the 15th. During the engineering open weekend, the Watercress Line will open the doors to all of its stations from Alsford to Alton, giving visitors a rare glimpse inside. Current restoration projects will be showcased at the engineering hub at Ropley Station, with access to the yard, engineering shed and carriage shop viewing galleries. Visitors will also be able to ride on steam trains to all four of the heritage stations along the 10-mile route with unlimited travel. The Watercress Line's Chief Executive Officer, Rebecca Dalling, said, "We are looking forward to welcoming visitors to enjoy a tour of discovery at the Watercress Line's engineering open weekend. It is wonderful to see the work that is carried out behind the scenes by our wonderful staff and volunteers to keep our heritage railway on track. With restoration projects on show, a free tour route, demonstrations, unlimited steam train travel and much more, it promises to be a fascinating day out for everyone."
Lessons from Olympic hero. Hundreds of swimmers headed to Winchester over the weekend to be taught by one of the world's best swimmers. Just weeks after winning a silver medal at the Paris Olympics, Adam Peaty spent 8 days teaching the young swimmers across the UK. On Saturday, August the 31st, hundreds of keen swimmers from across the south travelled to Winchester Sport and Leisure Park to take part in the Olympians AP Race Clinic. Peaty said, "We came to Winchester last year and realised there's a great community here who are passionate about sport. The facilities here are amazing. It's one of the best centres in the country." Alongside his elite team, including British champion Ed Baxter, Peaty spends the day coaching youngsters in 3 different swimming stations. Swimmers also received advice from a psychologist, plus a strength and conditioning coach. To end the event, Peaty gave a presentation on his career, including his recent Olympic experience, the lessons learned, and how he's maintained his world-class performance. The swimmer told the Chronicle, "As an athlete myself, I've done it all. And I don't mean that as a brag. It means I started from the bottom, like these kids. I tell them all it's a ladder, and you need to start at the bottom. We need to give them the first steps to begin that climb. It's not just about sport either. These are skills they will use for the rest of their lives." Parents, Jane and Tim Owen, from Newton Abbott in Devon, spent 6.5 hours driving on Friday, August the 30th, so their daughter Jemima could take part in the clinic. Tim said getting stuck in traffic was worth it. "She's a very promising swimmer. She does it 4 times a week, and we'd been watching the Olympics, so it just made sense to come here." 8-year-old Jemima, who's been swimming since she was 2, said, "It's been quite interesting. I've really liked learning new things, like turns and starts." Also travelling from afar was Ava Buckley, 12, with her friend Lily Jasper, 11. The pair met at the City of Cardiff Swim Club, which Ava joined 2 years ago. Dad, Steve Buckley, said, "It was her school swimming teacher who put her up for club. She used to be one of the coaches for the team and was really impressed with her. She loves swimming and she loves Adam Peaty, so this clinic was a nice early Christmas and birthday present for her." Ava, who's been swimming since she was 3, said, "It was really cool this morning. I just love swimming because it's a way to meet new people and you can do all different races." Lily added, "It was quite exciting to come here to be coached by an Olympian. I feel very grateful to be able to do it."
New charity challenge for ex-parliamentarian. The former MP for Winchester and Chandlers Ford is taking on a new challenge. Steve Brine, 50, who represented the now altered constituency from 2010 to 2024, will be chair of trustees at the Winchester Cancer Sanctuary. He announced last year he would leave the House of Commons at the 2024 election. Established recently by local yoga teacher Nikki Lynn Xavier, 55, the charity hopes to provide holistic care to anyone affected by cancer. It will provide activities and therapies including support, counselling, meditation, massage, reflexology and yoga, as well as a comprehensive cancer information library. Mr. Brine said, "It's early days, but we're all really excited to be involved in what promises to be a very special new local charity. Winchester is a growing city, yet no local cancer support service exists specifically for its population. The Winchester Cancer Sanctuary aims to change that. Watch this space and get involved if you can. The initial response, as we've started talking to people, has been amazing." Nikki Lynn's Xavier said, "The internet is awash with advice on cancer treatments and support, but there's a need for practical help and guidance from those who can speak from direct experience. The point of the sanctuary is that we as a community can come together to support each other, people with cancer, people touched by cancer, and people who simply want to help, assisted by qualified cancer professionals."
Road closed during work at former Debenhams. A road has been in Winchester city centre has been closed for 2 weeks while work is carried out on a former department store. Markets Lane, just off Winchester High Street, will be closed until Monday, September the 16th. The closure is in place while work is carried out on the former Debenhams department store, with signs indicating that the work is being carried out by MCS Construction. A large crane was present in Market Lane on Monday and Tuesday. As previously reported, work has been taking place to convert the old department store since October of last year. It's being converted into three units, with Nando's and Five Guys confirmed, and the third expected to be Pizza Express.
Wardens patrol to tackle antisocial behaviour. Police and Crime Commissioner Donna Jones is tackling antisocial behaviour by funding specialist wardens jointly with councils. The Commissioner has allocated £750,000 to reduce ASB, which will fund specialist wardens employed by local authorities. They will patrol hotspot locations identified through police data. A total of £37,500 has been allocated to Winchester. The move is a new way to tackle antisocial behaviour in partnership with local authorities to free up police officer time to respond to crimes and emergencies during the busiest period of the year. The number of hours and patrols carried out by the ASB wardens will be monitored and reported to the Home Office to track the positive effect and reduction in offending. Mrs. Jones said, "The summer is a busy period for policing. Crime reports show antisocial behaviour increases during the summer months. If not managed, issues can escalate into more serious crime, putting pressure on police resources."
We quite often end with an item about Marwell Zoo. Sadly, it's a very sad one this week, as ageing snow leopard is put to sleep at zoo. A Hampshire zoo has announced the death of their elderly female snow leopard, Irina, after a decline in her health due to age-related symptoms. Irina arrived at Marwell Zoo on January the 18th, 2010, at 2 years old, and turned 16 on May the 23rd this year. She has been on a geriatric care plan for some time, but her symptoms worsened, and the zoo's animal and veterinary teams had to make the difficult decision to euthanize her. Having spent most of her life alongside former mate Indiva, Irina raised four healthy cubs, Kamala and Kahir in 2011, and Animesh and Agendra in 2013. Laura Reed, Chief Executive of Marwell Wildlife, said, "We do have some aged animals at Marwell, and our teams work really hard to make sure that they have the best care into their senior years and beyond. Unfortunately, as a result, we've lost some notable and well-loved animals recently. I'm sure people will appreciate this is a difficult time for everyone at the zoo, especially our animal and veterinary teams who work tirelessly to ensure our animals have the very best welfare possible. Irina played an important role in the conservation of snow leopards, which are listed as vulnerable on the International Union of Conservation's Red List. As well as raising cubs of her own, Irina was a grandmother 15 times over and a great-grandmother twice, so her legacy will live on through the contribution she has made to the survival of her species. Carrie Arnold, Carnivore's team leader, said, "Irina was a very playful snow leopard, always stalking her keepers and playing hide-and-seek with us. She was incredibly strong-willed and knew exactly what she wanted. She was very affectionate and loved sitting up high, watching the world go by. She will be sorely missed by the whole team." Following Irina's death, Wajan, the young male who arrived at the zoo last year, will have access to the whole snow leopard habitat, including the newly opened extension. Marwell has been putting plans in place, along with the European Endangered Species Programme, to bring a young female to the zoo in due course as a companion for Wajan, and with a view to continuing their long history working with the breeding programme for this important species. That concludes our extracts for this week. Our thanks to our editors for selecting the extracts, to the copying, dispatch and memory stick preparation teams, and to our readers today, who were Tony Bergstrom.
Goodbye.
John Richards.
Goodbye.
And Jane Rutter.
Goodbye.
And from me, John Parker, goodbye too. Please return the memory stick as soon as you're able, not forgetting to put your address label inside the envelope. And a reminder that you can also hear Winchester Talking Newspaper on AWAS Community Radio 99.8 FM and digital on Saturdays at 5 p.m.